You're playing slow, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Ballew and Carl Mickelson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
Good morning, I'm Carl Mickelson. Great to join you again, Bob. Is it really already Saturday morning? It just seems like we're just sitting here talking about the Century Tournament of Champions, talking about our games. This week just went by fast. There was just too much going on, too much happening, a lot of good things, but it's always good to be back in this seat and talking to you.
Isn't it funny because it feels like every Saturday it's like, wow, we're doing this again already? Because like we just did this. But yeah, that's, you know, it's, listen, I, like we always said, I have young kids, and I think the one thing everybody says is the days are long, but the years are short.
Exactly.
And I think that's very relevant here. But I was supposed to play yesterday, 75 and sunny, but my daughter was sick. So I had to stay home with her while my wife worked. Very, very frustrating just knowing there's a cold front that came through. I had the opportunity to play in this great weather, but obviously the 16-month-old little darling is a little more important than that. Did you get to play this week at all?
I had an interesting week of golf. I was hosting Sean Tolson from Lynx Magazine and SI Morning Read, one of the great guys and really great golf writers from on the national scale. Good guys. So we brought him out to Horseshoe Bay, but Sean astutely, because he's a lifestyle writer as well, wanted to stop for barbecue. So we made that happen. We also, I thought it'd be a good idea to show him Butler pitch and putt. So rather than hustle all the way out Highway 71 to Horseshoe Bay, we played Butler pitch and putt at Sean's request with his PXG wedges and my putter, and we made it happen. So we did that, but I also got to play Summit Rock on Thursday. So that was my first official round of the year. Good beginning in terms of the golf in that regard. So we've got a quality location, but not a quality round of golf. I was a little wayward, unfortunately, with the round. Some good short games, some decent putting, but not the round I wanted to start 2022 with. But hey, we're off and running. We're off the schneid.
What did he think of Butler?
He really loved it. He got it. He got it instantly. I really enjoyed the space, was just blown away that it's right there in the middle of downtown, and it probably could have played it two or three more times, honestly. It's one of those things, you know, the ninth hole comes way too quickly on Butler. So he soaked it all in and left with some souvenirs and had a great time, but that was really cool.
That's awesome. What a fun two rounds. I mean, Butler obviously is so unique in and of itself. And then, you know, you don't get to play Summit Rock very often. As it's not one of the public ones out at Horseshoe Bay, and man, that place, I love Summit Rock. I think that's a fantastic course.
One of the best in the area. Yeah, you reminded me that we actually did one of the rare two steps you can do in the greater Austin area is Butler pitch and putt, and then the Whitewater putting course in the same day at Horseshoe Bay Resort. So, as far as quasi golf or mini golf or intro level golf or golf for all, I think we nailed it. I think we could have played Hancock, I guess, as the trifecta, but that was pretty cool. But Sean got to play all the courses at Horseshoe Bay, and given my schedule, I couldn't do that, but I was able to join him at Summit and have a nice dinner out at the Caprock Clubhouse and catch up with Brian Woodward. And you know, he's still basking in the glow of the great 2021 they had. They've got some really exciting plans. It looks like there's a lot of big things happening. Obviously, the Summit Rock Clubhouse is coming online, and they've got some plans for the back of the range and some real estate offerings that golfers should want to know about over there near the Caprock area. So it never stops out there with those guys, and it's always good to catch up with them.
Man, it's a fantastic, fantastic place. I always tell people you've just got to get out there for one reason or another, like figure out a reason. I go back to this all the time, but they do the wine and dine usually in November. And my wife and I used to go to that before we had kids. And once they get a little older and we feel comfortable leaving them for a couple of days, we certainly will go back to it. But it's just everything they do out there is awesome. But it's one of those deals where you go out there and you have a, like, you know, like a 5-course dinner with all these great chefs from the Food Network, and they bring in all kinds of great stuff, and they pair some wines with that. And then you get to hang out Friday night, and then Saturday you get up and they do chef things in the morning, and then kind of like tutorials. And then they have they call it the sunset walk in the afternoon. You walk around to different places that have brought in wines and foods and all kinds of stuff. And we have so much fun every time we go out there doing that. It's been a couple of years now that we have kids, but I encourage people, if you find something, they have a beer festival, they have all kinds of stuff going on.
They've got comedy coming up soon. I think Kevin Nealon's going to headline an event in February. I think it's Valentine's Day weekend, or wherever Valentine's Day falls this year. But yeah, great programming that Brian sort of masterminded on the golf side. They've got the shootout that happens in the fall with, you know, as you've seen in the past with some tour players and some great faces and names, including Rich Beam out there. So yeah, it just really never ends out there. There's always a good reason to get out to Horseshoe Bay. And again, as Austin grows and some of our listeners might be new to the city, it's just a great way to go and decompress and just get a little bit, as much as you love Austin, it's a great way to get out of the city for a bit and do something really cool. Whether it's, you know, the Mastercraft boats out there or the jet skis or any number of things. And again, three courses at your disposal, or four, if you know a Summit Rock member, it's not a bad way to spend a long weekend.
No, and there's so many places around the area that we talk about. You know, my wife and I have gone to Fredericksburg and hung out there and done stuff down there, you know, spend a week. There's so many good places around here to get away for a couple of days. So I definitely recommend Horseshoe Bay, one of the ones at the top of that list. All right, Carl, before we go any further, you know, I just think it's been on the top of my mind all week, probably for anybody who really cares about the game of golf, is the passing of Tim Rosefort, such an influential media member in the game of golf. Every time he came on TV, I felt like it was something that you wanted to turn it up. Like he, you know, I think in one of the pieces they did about him this week after his passing, they talked about how he had the greatest Rolodex in all of golf, where he could just call any golfer at any time and talk to him about whatever he needed to talk to him. But it really was a deal where I vividly remember anytime he would pop up on Golf Channel or anywhere else, NBC, whatever it was, I would literally be like, I got to unmute this because he's probably either going to have some breaking information or some really important information in the game of golf. And you know me, Carl, we've talked about this a bunch on the show. I've always been a golf fan, but I never really got into the game until the last 10 years or so, where I would watch and I just wouldn't listen to the analysis. I just kind of wanted to watch shots and root for players and kind of that stuff. And I think over the last, you know, 10 years or so, I've really kind of gone into the fine details of what this game is, and seeing somebody like that you follow for a while, and the great job they do for the game of golf. And I'm sure every player would tell you at some point they've probably had some kind of bad interaction with a media member at some point, whether it's they didn't like something they wrote, even though it was fair. There are all those type of things. I think there'd be very few golfers that would ever tell you they had any problems with Tim Rosefort. And I know you knew him a little bit. I never had the chance to meet him, but it was just he had a short battle with Alzheimer's, and it's just one of those things that if you love this game and you love why it's become so popular internationally, Tim Rosefort's a big reason why.
There's no question. He's become one of those great voices of golf. I mean, you know, he just sort of snuck into the role. I mean, I first knew Rosefort from reading him. You know, back when he was still had the beard and the glasses and kind of a different look. He and Larry Dorman, who was the New York Times, and then we worked at Callaway for a lot of years, were almost twins of each other. So it was almost eerie to see those guys walk into the same press room and almost not be able to tell them apart. But once you got to know Tim Rosefort a little bit, what you learned is that he truly was the nice guy that he portrays on TV. I think. One of his colleagues was probably Craig Dolch, his longtime friend from the Palm Beach Post, put it best, is a lot of people change demeanor once they go from print to TV. They get a little bit Hollywood, and there was none of that manifest in Tim Rosefort. He was a genuine guy. I knew him as a hard worker, a guy that would just grind for the story. And that's where that trust comes from. How you can be on Tiger's short list of guys that have the number for texting and fact checking. You earn that. That's hard earned. Not everybody gets that. But once you've seen Rosefort in action, what you saw was a guy that really cared about getting the story right. I mean, I think of times where he needed Dave Pelz to, you know, to give comments on things that would happen with Phil Mickelson or a different player, and just wanted to get the inside scoop, but also wanted to just make sure that all the details were correct. So sometimes the interview with Dave would go great. Then a couple days later, or maybe the next morning, it was like, hey, was that 1979 that Dave started working with Jim Simons? And was it Ennis Crone or Ennis Brooke? You know, it was that sort of thing where every little detail mattered. To Tim Rosenfort. I remember him being the MC of the Golf Writers Association of America dinner, which they always do in Augusta, the Wednesday night before play starts. And, you know, the golf writers get together and you award the player of the year and the, you know, the most, you know, generous player of the year. So, yeah, so you always, you know, for years and years, you got Tiger Woods and Annika Sörenstam, it seemed like. And you get Rory McIlroy in more recent years and, you know, John Rahm. But he just fit that role. I'm not saying it's just uncanny that a golf writer could just jump right into that role, but it was so seamless to see Rosenfort go from a print guy to just one of the very best, as you pointed out, in broadcast or on stage or on the mic, could be essentially doing what you do. So I think you saw that. I mean, but I mean, you could probably say the same thing. How many guys can you name that jump from print to really being at the top of the class in what they do in sports reporting on air? It's not easy. I've been writing a long time. I couldn't jump in that role.
Yeah.
I mean, it's yeah, but you couldn't be happier for the guy. You couldn't think of anybody more deserving, more who'd gone down the road and earned his path. And, you know, everybody appreciated his success and everybody celebrated his success. And it's really sad. All you can do, it's a huge loss because, you know, there's guys that work hard to get the stories, but there was only one Tim Rosenfort, a guy that was genuinely nice, genuinely kind, genuinely caring, remembered the names, remembered faces, put the details together in a way that just, you know, was uniquely his. So it's a tough loss. It's passing of a generation, and certainly somebody great will come along and fill his shoes, but they won't be Tim.
Yeah. It's a big loss for the game of golf, for all the people that knew him at Golf Channel and NBC and just in the media in general that worked with him. Tim Rosenfort was 66 years old. As I said, he passed away from a short battle with Alzheimer's. As they continue covering events for the Golf Channel and NBC and CBS and everybody who loves the game, I thought it was kind of funny, Carl, you and I were talking before the show about how my worst nightmare, my most dreaded thing in golf was at the Century Tournament of Champions last week as Cameron Smith won the tournament at 34 under par, one shot ahead of John Rahm, two shots ahead of Matt Jones. 34, 33, and 32 under par. Just a fantastic beginning. I mean, they're always fun. Cameron went 65, 64, 64, 65. John Rahm went 66, 66, 61, 66, and lost by a shot. So just another idea of, you know, sometimes I kind of wonder what they're going to end up doing, what this tour is going to become. Do they want that? Is that something that they think is entertaining to fans? And is that something that they like week in and week out? If that's something that happens, we'll see. But really good for Cameron Smith to get a win. Really good player. Another up-and-comer that we've talked about a lot. One of those guys that I would think would be in a mix for his first major this year. As good a golf as he's playing. So I just don't love the 34 under, Carl, but okay, it happens. It's going to happen at tournaments now, and that's just the reality.
It is the reality. I mean, and that's what happens when the wind doesn't blow at Kapalua. There's a lot of wide open space to hit those balls. Those are big greens, and those are really precision, great players. When you go ball in hand and no wind for most of the tournament, that's what you're going to see. These are the best players in the world. It's exciting to see the players that won last year come back. And I'm always curious about this event because you see who's coming in with momentum, who didn't, you know, get fat and lazy during the holidays. And it's the usual suspects. We knew Cameron Smith was coming. I'm really intrigued to see if he takes the next step in his maturation and building his legacy as a player, because he's got all the tools. That's one thing you saw is that he was bombing drives. He was hitting his irons well, short. Everything looked sharp. Obviously when you go 34 under, it's, you know, it's hard to say that anything could have been off. And the same goes for John Rahm and, yeah, Patrick Cantlay, Colin Morikawa, and Justin Thomas, who were right there. I mean, and one of the guys we asked about, will the last couple seasons be a fluke, or will Daniel Berger be one of those guys that's just around Ryder Cups and President's Cups and major championships for the duration? So small sample size, one tournament where the wind didn't blow and the, you know, the conditions were soft all week, but the right names were up there because obviously they acquitted themselves and won a tournament in 2021, but it's enough to still create just enough intrigue to see how things go. I mean, you can almost put a pause or put an asterisk on the tournaments in Hawaii, but just the fact that you got the field, you got all the guys but Rory there to the event, and they dug in and went low. They had a good time. They had a crazy birdie and eagle fest, you know, that we may not see again for a long, long time. And again, to your point about the going low and how they're set up, that's what's great about the tour is there's events that are going to be set up for low scoring and high scoring. And but these players with the skill they have, if any superintendent or any weather condition lets its guard down, this is the trend. These guys are so good right now.
They're so good. And I do think it's funny as we look at the Sony Open in Hawaii this week, Cameron Smith 2 under. So it's just, you know, it's the game of golf. I just always laugh about it. I always think it's funny when you see somebody go 34 under and the next weekend they're 2 under after 2 rounds. It's a humbling game, as we talked about very often. And but I did love at the Sony Open as they get ready to start round 3 this afternoon. Carl, really cool to see Jim Furyk kind of hovering around the top of the leaderboard. You know, and even Jim said, you know, he said I'm 52 and I'm not here to just to come out and have a vacation. I mean, he's still grinding away, trying to win tournaments. Fun to see a name like that. I'll tell you the other name, and I do want to get your thoughts on Jim Furyk, but the other name that I really was kind of personally excited to see at the top of the leaderboard, because, you know, I love when guys are really good and then they just kind of like fade away and you're like, whatever happened to that guy? But Hao Tung Lee was back toward the top of the leaderboard. I love that because we saw him here in Austin, at the Dell Technologies match play, and was playing some great golf and ended up, you know, just kind of disappearing, kind of falling off the face of the earth. And I always love to see guys like that back in it with a chance to win as they get back on the tour, they get back into the swing of things with their own swings. I thoroughly enjoy that.
Yeah, and this is an intriguing event because it's not always like the marquee field like you'd see at a Players Championship or you know, some of the more longstanding prestige events. You sort of get some of the guys who turn their Century Tournament Champions trip to Kapalua into an extended vacation and maybe don't play Sony, but the Sony's got a great field. But this is to me, this is where the intrigue starts, where you get some of these younger players who've just earned their status, or some players who've just moved up a rung on the PGA Tour and they can play in this event, and you get a super cross section. I mean, you look at a young player like Dylan Wu, and then you look at the guy that led the field after the first round, Jim Furyk, who in his 50s. So you get that great cross section, you know. I think it takes a real golf geek, but this is the kind of tournament I like for that reason, because you get this crazy bouillabaisse of young and old, you know, your Russell Henley being up there. You know, it's almost like you can't fault yourself for forgetting some of these names, because there's just so many good players right now. There's so many guys nipping at each other's heels that, you know, the guys that were hot 5 years ago really have to, you know, keep it up, because with the state of the Korn Ferry Tour and the collegiate game and just all the developmental components of the pro game just lead to incredible play. And there's so many good players, but there's so many players that have had status. I mean, if you look at Stuart Sink, the year he had last year, the being successful winning and it doesn't look like it's going anywhere. There's just, it's amazing to me that there's just not enough room potentially for all the great players out on the out on the tour. When I was in Scottsdale last month, we talked again about some of the young players from Canada, or you know, guys like Will Zalatoris that played the Canadian tour, you know, for a stretch. It's just a wealth of talent coming in that it's almost hard to keep track of everybody unless you're really into it.
Yeah, you know, on the house on Lena, it's funny, you made the round of 16 here at the Dell Technologies at the 2020 PGA Tour Championship that Colin Morikawa won, where he really kind of burst onto the scene. Haotong led the tournament after two rounds. He had a two-shot lead going into the weekend, finished tied for 17th. But again, it's like you said, there's so many guys out here and so many guys that I think we all love seeing. And it's going to be a fun weekend to see, you know, is Russell Henley the guy that pulls away, or is there somebody that's going to nip at his heels all weekend? You know, we'll see how it all goes. All right, listen, Carl has a great interview coming up. This is really cool. He got about 20 minutes with Paul Nagy this week and had the opportunity to talk to him, a great golf coach here in the Austin area at Forest Creek and, of course, at PGA Tour Superstore. So Carl's interview with Paul is coming up next. You're going to get to listen in on that, and then we'll return for a final segment here on the Horn. Of course, we got to mention our awesome sponsor, PGA Tour Superstore, who's just been terrific for us. And Carl has been in to have a driver fitting and work on his game there. It's right there at the Arbor Walk, right there at 360, 183. Make your way on in and tell them Bob and Carl sent you. And you listen to Playing Through on the Horn, brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. And they'll hook you up with all kinds of discounts and good stuff as you get your January 2022 started in the game of golf. All right, stay with us. Carl and Paul Nagy coming up. This is Playing Through.
You're playing slow, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Ballew and Carl Mickelson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
Welcome back to Playing Through on the Horn, presented by PGA Tour Superstore. We're kicking into our second segment as promised. We mentioned we'd have a special guest with us, and we do. A gentleman I knew of. I knew of before I knew him, because he, one of the many things Paul Nagy is an inventor. I knew his invention, but as we get to know him in this segment, you'll know that he's a teacher, he's a coach, he's a master club fitter, an inventor. He's been a little bit of a rock star past as well. He's a community builder. He's an inspiration. We'll just put it that way. But for practical purposes, we're going to introduce Paul Nagy as an assistant pro at Forest Creek Golf Club, which we all know well, and a master fitter, a studio fitter at our friends at PGA Tour Superstore, where we met each other. Paul, you got me fixed with my Titleist driver. You've got me confident over the ball. So, Paul Nagy, welcome to Playing Through on the Horn.
Thanks for having me.
How's that introduction, man?
To chat with you. That was, dude, that's a lot, hell right? of an interview. Wow. I mean, that's can I bottle that? Can you send me a file of that?
We can give you that easily.
That could be my ringtone.
If you ever need a hype man, I can just kind of go 5 feet to the side of you or behind you and say he's it. All these things.
I want to earn it. I want to earn it, though. I got to make sure we get you in your game where you exactly where you want to be.
We got to be comfortably single digit. And that doesn't have to be low single digit. But that's where we have to get. We have to get the trust factor going. But enough about my game. These are our beloved listeners. They've heard enough about my game. Let's kick into Paul Nagy. Who is, you know, here in Austin, Texas, you know, at Forest Creek, they can get lessons with you and you're seeing some huge gains with your students. Yeah. You can get custom fit like I did at PGA Tour Superstore. But as I alluded to, I knew there was somebody who invented a training aid, a putting aid called the Pill, before I knew there was a Paul Nagy. How did you develop the Pill, which for listeners' purposes, if you can invent it, a ball is round. If you cut the sides off, it's basically the shape of a pill, and it's a training aid that helps you putt more squarely, more confidently. And it, there's some multipliers in that, and that probably helps your green reading a little bit, helps your aim. But I'll let you get into how the pill came about, because that's one of the coolest putting training aids I've ever seen.
Thanks. It was interesting. So I was actually in Los Angeles where you first possibly had even come into contact with the product, and you guys, I think, got it in its infant prototype stage. I was teaching at a junior golf academy called Tregnan Golf, which is in Griffith Park. If you have any West Coast listeners or people from Los Angeles, they'll know Griffith Park. And at the front of Griffith Park, there's a place called the Marty Tregnan Golf Academy. Mm-hmm. And so I was coaching there, and they had every training aid known to man. And so, you know, I knew as a coach that those are very limited in their scope, right? You kind of tie yourself up with things, and then you always go back to being the same, you know, that you were without it. So, you know, I issued a challenger to myself. I said, okay, stop complaining about what everybody else does. You're so smart. Let's see what you can do. And so that was like 2004, 2005. And so I had all the training aids out one day, and I was looking, and I had the pinballs. Do you remember those, where they were two golf balls that were silver connected by a post?
Right. I think Sergio used that for a time, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. I mean, they would pop up occasionally just for like face angle and, you know, at impact. But so I was getting my face angle really square, and I was like, okay, there's something kind of to this. But then once I hit it within like a foot and a half, it would just roll out, spin out. And so I was like, that shouldn't happen. I was like, why can't somebody make something that goes all the way to the hole?
Right.
So that was one piece right there. Bam, all the way to the hole. And then I challenged myself from any distance. And then, right. So I kind of sat on that. I sat on that idea for a while. And I think I could actually get you the exact moment. And it was Freddie Couples on the bulkhead at 16 at Sawgrass, right before the famous 17. Okay. And it was a par five. And
great par five.
His ball was just on the edge of the bulkhead, right in the rough. And so he had to go nose down.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm 99% sure it was him, but it could have been VJ, but I'm 99, just in case.
They both did that. Yeah,
exactly.
Hitting with the toe of the putter. Yeah,
yeah. And they may actually have both done it in that same week off the bulkhead. If we have the footage to go back and look at, I'm not 100%, but what it was that when they hit it, and they did a slow motion replay, a zoom in of the ball, because the camera from 17 turned and zoomed to there. And I looked at it, I'm watching the ball, and I'm like, oh my God, the only piece of the golf ball that's touching the green ever at one moment is that center third.
That's right.
And I said, holy crap, there's something to that. And so I had these ideas before. One looked like a cocktail weenie, and I still have my prototype drawings of it. One was like a skate wheel almost, with you know, even with a ballast in it, the weight system. But then I said, I knew inherently, I don't know why my brain's messed up this way, but I said the ballast will actually hold it straighter online. I said, I don't want that. I want it to go crooked.
Right.
And then I had a football idea, like, you know, someone actually came out with it. And so much later, it's actually like a rugby ball, and it's a guy in Australia. But I said, you know, that you can't play with, because again, it doesn't go all the way to the hole, because if you have severe break, a piece will catch. So when I was, oddly enough, I was playing in a band. There's the music connection too.
That's right.
And let's go. I want to call this 2010-ish. So the idea came to me. I had the drawings, and then I said, finally, I acted on it. And so I brought some golf balls to my friend who was playing in the band with me, who actually was in a wood shop and built sets. They built airplane sets. They're called Aero mockups, and I still think they're the number one supplier of airplane mockups for like sets.
Like when it looks like they're on a plane in a TV show or a movie. That's what he builds those. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So they would ship them, like they cut them in half. Ship them, build them out in any way they wanted, so you can so this guy was like an incredible with anything you needed, he could build for you right there. And a great apocalypse guy. We should all know one good apocalypse guy.
Keep this guy's number, no doubt. Yeah.
So But so I brought him golf balls. I said, hey, can you cut the sides off these? And he was like, yeah, I think so. So he cut the sides off. We made sure to get it exactly right as we could. And I did two Pro Vs. I did a Pro V, a Pro VX, and then a TP5.
Okay.
Those were my three at the time, because those were the most popular.
Right.
And so I cut off the sides, and then I brought it around. I was a caddy at Bel Air Country Club at the time. And so I brought it, I showed a couple of guys, and, you know, they were like, yeah, you know. And then the pro there at the time was like, oh, yeah, Dave Pals already did that. And I'm like, what do you mean? I was like, no, he didn't. I went back and I researched. I'm like, no, he didn't. I was like, he drew a stripe. He had that triple track, basically.
Right, an O-ball, basically, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's still
out
on the market.
Line end over end, and you can see the lines wobble, but you don't see the actual device itself go off track.
Yeah. And so then, I got down to the shape, and then so I was coaching my friend to get, you know, I was trading him as a bass player for golf lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually played for Selena Gomez. And he was one of the writers on her song, Love Song.
How
he actually wrote it. Yeah, it's crazy.
Incredible.
So we're at Van Nuys par three. And I just take it out. I was giving him a lesson. Then I take it out. We're playing. And I putted with it from like 40 feet. And it was like literally like shot out of a machine, like a pitching machine. I was like, oh, damn. He's like, dude, what's that? So I had him hit it, and he couldn't hit it. And so he couldn't hit it, and it was very specific. Face open, it leans one way. Face closed, it leans another way. And I knew that already, but I was like.
You saw they needed feedback.
Yes. And so to take that, to see it so different than from what I did, was like, oh, my God, this thing is really good. So, you know, I spent a year with it just doing nothing. And now all of a sudden it was proving itself. And then so on one of the holes, I said, well, what if I could chip it? And I chipped it, stood it up, chipped it. And it was, again, like out of a machine, and rolled and almost went in and was standing up. And I was like, oh, my God. So I step up to the next tee, and it's 140-yard par three, eighth hole there. And I go, and I'm like, I'm going to try and hit it. He's like, dude, do it. That's crazy. So I hit it, and the ball goes up perfectly online, on plane, everything, great swing. And the ball hits the green and spins back perfectly and remained standing.
This is still one of your prototypes, or is this an actual
pill?
Yes. Okay.
This was the prototype. And so then I was like, oh, my God. And he's like, dude, you did it. I was like, oh, my God, I think I did it. And so that was 2011. We fast forward a couple of years, and I started developing some drills with it. Like you saw the two pill drill. And so my cousin came over, and he saw this on the shelf, and he was like, what is this? And I'm like, oh, it's this thing I made. He's like, well, tell me about it, dude. He's like, you're obviously an amazing golfer. And he's like, you know, your music, and like, you know how to present stuff. So next thing you know, he's like, let's go make prototypes. So I found out where to buy like 1,000 cheap, no-name golf balls.
Right.
And so I ordered them. They came in. And then I brought them to a machine shop up in Sun Valley in Los Angeles. So the guy cuts them for me. I go into the shop, and there's just shreds of golf balls everywhere. Right?
What a sight. Yeah.
Yeah, it was so weird and cool. And so and so then I brought them to a paint shop in Burbank. And so they painted them for me, and they painted the pill on the side, because I always wanted to call it the pill, because back in the 90s, and I don't know how long it was, early 90s, there was an announcer who had said, this guy's really rolling his pill when they would putt well. And so that always stuck with me. And so, and I don't know who the announcer was, but it was only a short time this guy was on, but I really succinctly remember hearing that.
Tiger uses that too. It's interesting. Rolling the pill.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's how it became the pill. Cause I'd heard somebody say, oh, he's rolling his pill. And then I brought it out and started, you know, after that, I started bringing them out to people. And I knew you could hit them, and I'd have them hit them, and the paint would explode off the sides. Cause it would compress too much. So it was like, you know, it looked like eggshells. And so then I knew that. So the company we bought the golf balls from, I called them and said, hey, can you machine the sides off of a golf ball with a white core, make the core white, and then just print the pill on it. And we did. And we said, hey, let's go to the PGA show. Obviously, here we are right in the PGA show time. We called them. We got a booth. And then next thing you know, it was like, I mean, everybody was coming over to us. I mean, I was giving putting lessons to guys on tour. Guys were asking me for putting help because they had, you know, you do the 2-pill drill and from 10 feet, I was getting guys on tour that the ball from 10 feet would split like 6.5 feet apart.
So faith and belief issues, even at the highest level of golf.
Yeah, but he was so square at impact, but as the ball left the face, he would flip it closed. And this happened at a 10,000th of a second. And I found out that it was a 10,000th of a second because we had guys who knew all the slow, who did all the slow-mo camera work. We're like, yeah, I mean, the ball sticks to the face for a 10,000th of a second. So that's how I learned that number. And so even at that, even if you get to square, you can still flip. And so all of a sudden it would be like the ball, your start line in golf, but then you hit a hook. So...
is that, Paul, to diverge a little bit, is that about the time, that process you're describing of seeing people and being able to instantly analyze, you talk about that 10,000th of a second. I've been playing for 30 plus years. I can help people a little bit, but I try not to. Is that kind of when you knew inherently that you were going, did you had the ability to be a good golf teacher? Or
Well, for golf coaching, you know, obviously to stick to the point, that was a long story, but I, you know, I just, sometimes I can't believe the story because it's like out of a book. But I think I always, it was weird. Even when I was younger, I was always in my eyes work in slow motion for some reason. When I see golf swings, I can slow it down in my brain. And once you get all these, the iPhone camera stuff, it just confirmed. Right.
Absolutely.
But before a kind of like slow motion iPhone camera, we didn't have that. So we, it was the pill, honestly, for putting strokes, at least that proved my theory. And by then I was, I'm a Sam Putt Lab certified as well now. And so even before I was Sam certified, I was able to talk the way Sam was, and people would be like, how does this guy know this? And then they would check it on Sam and they were like, oh my God, it's exactly what he's talking about. It's like
Kenny. That's why I think it's a great progression in your career and the way you're using your time giving back to the game, that people can actually have lessons one-on-one with you. You've worked with players, you've helped tour players correct their faults, but they can go see you at Forest Creek. And you can pinpoint the issues in their games. How's that been going? You're assistant pro out at Forest Creek, but what's the process been like teaching out there?
Yeah, it's, you know, I tell people like this. I went backwards in this, but you have to, you know, sometimes you have to walk around the world to go around the corner. I just say I took the wrong turn, It's been really great. I love working with people from the beginning. I feel like as an instructor, when I get a new golfer, that is my ultimate responsibility, because it's if I'm a good instructor, and can I take them from phase one, step one, all the way to wherever they want to go? And I feel a tremendous amount of responsibility to that when I'm coaching people, with the idea of golf still has to be fun. So I feel like that's my focus in my coaching style is that I have to speak to the level they're at, but I still have to give them the ability to go out and play golf and have fun and teach them to understand how, when they go wrong, to not freak out, that they can fix it.
No question. Give us a quick success story. One of your recent students out Forest Creek.
Yeah, I had a guy, so we'll go with the higher level first. I had a guy who's somewhere around a 9 or a 10, who's been ballooning up to like a 12 or 14. His name's Dylan. And he's just, he rides, you know, just like you do, like you said. It's like you have these days where it's just good and then days where it's like unmanageable. And so his swing speed, let's say, was about 102, 103 with the driver. And so we got into some movement stuff, because over the years, I've really learned to refine body movement and really there's just a couple of key moves, and most people don't realize it's not a body flexibility or mobility issue or ability. It's not mobility or ability, it's sequencing. So I've developed some drills that help with the sequencing. So this guy literally went from hitting it like 280, 290. We went through a series of three lessons, and he was honestly better than any tour player I've ever seen. He really believed in what I was saying because he could feel the difference, and he did everything I asked him. And then with no joke, within a series of like three lessons, he's like, dude, I could show you the text. He's like, dude, I was averaging 330 off the tee. And he plays down in down at Yaupon and the other courses down there.
Those courses can barely contain 330 yard drives. That's incredible.
Yeah. So the process that I did with him, and a lot of people don't realize this, first you have to learn how to hit the golf ball low.
Right.
Because if you hit the ball low, you're using body and not hands. Because anytime hands come in, you're going to see high elevation. So for all your listeners out there, if you're going through golf lessons and you're still hitting the ball super high, you're still using your hands. The best thing you can learn is how to hit the golf ball low. Once you hit it low, you'll start to see some of the misses. Typically when you're using your body is low left.
Right.
And I told this guy, I said, celebrate that. So he was hitting a lot of low left. He went from hitting a fade to actually drawing it and even hooking it. And I'm like, hey, great job. That's lesson one.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Paul, we spent so much time on the pill.
Oh my God. Yes.
That we're close to the end of the segment, my friend.
Yeah. Wow.
So the only solution, my man, is to have you back again.
Wow.
I think the listeners will have really enjoyed this. What they would enjoy more of, though, is what you just described, going through the process, meeting Paul Nagy at Forest Creek Golf Club, going to see him at PGA Tour Superstore to get fit, and just witnessing the magic of Coach Paul. Who is really one of the bright minds here in Austin, Texas, in golf, has an innate ability to pinpoint problems, teach them. Paul Nagy, thanks for being on. He is Paul Nagy. I'm Carl Mickelson. When we come back, we're going to.
You're playing through. Hosted by Bob Ballew and Carl Mickelson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
One final segment. Playing through on the horn. Talking about PGA Tour Superstore. He's Carl Mickelson. I'm Bob Ballew. Great stuff with Paul Nagy. As you guys get into the swing and the game of golf. And what was your biggest takeaway, Carl? What did you enjoy most about your conversation?
Well, it's more the stuff off air with Paul. I mean, as you notice, he talked about his invention for 12 of the 20 minutes that we discussed. Paul could probably do a 4-hour podcast on game improvement every week. And so hopefully what the listeners took away is that he's just a great wellspring of knowledge on the golf swing, the golf game. He has an innate ability to help people see what they're doing wrong and come up with really creative ways to fix them. I think maybe it's his background as a musician that makes him a little bit creative, makes him a little bit less textbook than some of the teachers you see. It's just it's a fun hang having a lesson with Paul. It's not like you feel beat up if you're not getting it right away. Paul's just a good energy and a good guy to be around. So if you have the means to get over to Forest Creek and find a lesson with Paul, or get to PGA Tour Superstore and get a fitting with him, I think he's one of the rising stars in the teaching game and in the game improvement side of the business. We're lucky to have him here in the Austin area.
That's awesome. It was great stuff. And I always look forward to more with Paul, because he can, like you said, he can go on for a long time about some of the things that really can help your golf game get better. All right, before we go, we do want to bring this up. I think we can get to a much deeper conversation about this later. But when I say, you know, there's a Netflix series coming out, a little behind the scenes of PGA Tour type stuff, I think that excites everybody. But then you see the names: Spieth, Morikawa, Hovland, Fleetwood, Poulter, Fowler, Koepka, Finau, Champ, Answer, Damon, Schauffele, JT, Watson, Bubba, Max Homa, Matt Fitzpatrick. Like, this is what people want to see. This is what everybody wants, is a behind the curtains look at everything that goes on behind the scenes. Now, there are so many guys, and I really think this is something we could probably save for a little bit, because this series isn't going to come out for a while. Obviously, they're going to tape a lot of it this year. But a lot of those names, it will be really, really interesting to see how they react to having that, you know, intrusive camera after a bad round. How will Bubba Watson react? Some of the guys that are, you know, a little, that can run a little hot, how will they react with those cameras in their face in those moments, which is maybe why Bryson DeChambeau decided not to do it. I know he said it's because he has an inside look at, you get the inside look at him behind the scenes, whatever, which I disagree with. Anytime you're controlling it, you don't really get the full look. But
you're right.
But I think with these guys, it'll be really interesting. And I'm just going to bring up one name, and I want you to bring up one name because we got to get out of here pretty quick. But the one of the names I'm really interested in this whole season, but the, especially that he's going to be in this Netflix series, is Max Homa. And it's not probably for the reasons that you think. Obviously, he's become a big Twitter star, and everybody loves him on Twitter. But he said he really wants to get a little bit away from that, because that's how everybody got to know him, as the guy who was roasting swings and then playing great in golf tournaments. He wants to get better and better. And I'll be interested to see his personality come through on that show, because it will be fantastic, but also to see how he does take that next step, because Twitter really did drive him to becoming a more known player on tour. So I think it'll be really interesting to see how Max kind of plays out, how his year plays out based on all that. Who's the one guy right up the top? And again, we'll get more into this next week, but who's the one guy that interests you the most?
I think Max Homa is a good pick for that, because will this be the year of the maturation and moving on to the next phase of his life and his career? Is he going to be the cool guy on Twitter forever? I'm going to pick an easy one, just Sergio Garcia, a little bit of an Austin connection. I think these kind of things bring an opportunity to reinvent oneself and to show people just a different shade. So tied for me, because people can go one way or the other on two of these guys, Bubba Watson and Sergio Garcia. I'm just interested to see how they make use of this camera time.
No, we'll be. I like that. That's really good. And like we said, we'll get much more into this, because there's so many storylines that you can start to pick up on, especially as guys go through injuries, guys go through slumps. Guys go through big wins that, you know, they haven't had before. I think all of that stuff will make this so much more interesting. And it will be, to me, so much better than the Brooks Bryson deal that we had to suffer through the final few months of the year. It was fun at first. Then it became obvious there some of it was for PIP, for the PIP right. money. I think it'll be nice to have a genuine look behind the scenes at some of the stuff's going on. I know sometimes with cameras, you don't, but there will be real reactions that we'll see that we don't normally get to see. All right, Carl, great stuff as always. Glad you got to sit down with Paul. We need more of that this year on the show, because those type of things are what people need to hear, and I appreciate you getting the opportunity to do that with Paul.
More and more guests will be a good thing. More and more Paul will be a good thing. So we're excited to dive in, get their listeners more guests, more insight into the game. Even though we're two of the top minds in golf, we're going to get you some even better ones week in, week out. Yeah.
I like that. That's a good joke to go on the way out. Not doubting your knowledge of this game, but
no,
you
can doubt and ridicule my knowledge of the game. So there's plenty more qualified than me, but it's fun to be in the seat, like we always say.
I love it. All right, Carl, always enjoy it. Look forward to doing it next week.
Cannot wait, sir.
All right, he is Carl Mickelson. I'm Bob Ballew. This is Playing Through on the Horn, brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. Go out and make a bunch of birdies, everyone.